Good morning, everyone. Good to be here, huh? Good to be here, huh? Good, good. Welcome to everybody, especially welcome to our friends from Gainesville. And other the Reverend Jim Merritt was here. He is the pastor at Gainesville, and he was here as part of the interim training that we hosted this past week, just continuing to kind of sharpen our skills to be better pastors, whatever it is we're doing in our ministries. And it's always great to spend time with Jim, and so I'm so glad that you all came today. A particular welcome to you. Would you join me in prayer? God, thank you so much. Thank you for your Spirit and for your love, and thank you so much for Christ and the powerful message of justice. That Christ really lived and taught and embodied in his own life. I thank you for how that light continues to shine in our time. May you give us the courage to step forward to meet that calling in our times. May you give us the hands and the hearts and the provisions to be able to meet our neighbors wherever our neighbors are, that together we will make this a more just community, a more just world. And I thank you so much that you have promised us we are never, ever, ever, ever alone. That we are well provided for, regardless of what the messages may be that we have received in this world. Help us to rise as children of light. Help us to rise as children of hope. Help us to rise as people who hold justice to our core, knowing how very precious the ideas of justice are. And when in our own times they remain incomplete, help us to believe over the mountain for the next generation and the next generation and the next generation. You are living Word. Come and live among us this morning. Amen. We've been talking about justice for the last 3 weeks, and we've also called it Just Us, and been talking a lot about how there was a great deal of trust placed in us, in the understanding of how we relate to God through this way that Christ taught. And one of the things Christ taught us over and over and over is that if you love God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and if you love one another with all of your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and if you learn to love yourself with all of your heart, soul, mind, and strength, there will be justice. And you are enough to bring that about. In your times, in our times, in our generation. It's a wonderful calling to be a part of. It's a little bit scary. It doesn't ask us to be perfect. But what it does say is that perfect justice can happen among imperfect people. Right? I'm one of those imperfect people, so I kind of go right there. And I'm very glad that justice happens sometimes despite me as well. And sometimes I'm so happy that justice has moved on before I've caught up with where her spirit is going in this world. Thank God for that, right? Thank God that justice goes ahead of us always, gives us visions to live into. And those visions, if they're really about justice, they free all of us. All of us. No matter what. Sometimes it might feel like we're having to sacrifice for justice. We've talked about distributional justice, of a vision where we have enough. Remember we talked about enoughness 2 Sundays ago? We have enough to go around. How's that for a contrary message to what we hear a lot of times in this world? We have enough. We have enough to go around. Egalitarian justice. How deeply can we value one another with dignity and with equality in this world? And not only can we value one another, how deeply can we stand in solidarity and work in solidarity and live in solidarity until one another are truly, truly free, happy, and healthy. And we become much better at being safe with one another as well. Today is the last of this series, but it's not the last time we're going to talk about justice. We're going to continue on. I think, you know, this Christ of justice is so important to us. We wouldn't be here without this Christ of justice. I think it is perhaps that dimension of Christ that might be the most intimate dimension of Christ that called forward metropolitan community churches. It was as if Christ asked us, will you be a light in this world? Will you allow your own experiences and your own struggles and at times our own pain and at times our own self-limitations to become a site where wisdom can grow, not only for us, but for the communities and the world around us? Don't you love that? And you know what? Sometimes it's great to get a reality check when people who are kind of outside of our circles see us and talk about us and, you know, sort of want to tell other people about us. I think that's always kind of fun sometimes because, you know, they're seeing you with fresh eyes. We're on the inside looking out. We can't always see it. And there was a little article today. I wanted to share you a few things. The article was called Don't Drink the Water, Translated Travel Tips for Coming to America. And this is how different people from different parts of the world, they've been translated from their original language, the traveling tips they gave to each other for coming to America. This is really interesting stuff. The first one was from Latin America, and the first thing that they told each other, it's probably best not to drink the water. And from Germany, they wrote, American social boundaries are very inconsistent. Things like we should get together sometime don't really mean anything. Unless the same people keep mentioning it to you, then it does mean something. During a party at your house, the Germans say, don't be surprised if Americans will just walk up to your fridge and help themselves. From Switzerland. Americans don't like public nudity, intoxication, or urination. Well, they were surprised by this. But they were talking about values there, even about, you know, their children, that you have to clothe your children more over here than they do in their countries and stuff. So very different value going on there. From France, do take a road trip across the West, but don't be weird about American Indians or cops. From Italy, tipping is fraught with misunderstanding. You know, the American system of tipping just really blows people's minds because they see wages different there in terms of what people get paid in service industries. And from Australia, it says, don't be surprised, you will probably get sucked into a political discussion. Americans are really opinionated. They want you to think about government, about politics, about current issues. A typical conversation might go like this. Hi, I'm Matt. Nice to meet you. The name's Bob. Where are you from, Matt? Sydney, Australia. Oh, I see. You've come a long way. So what's your take on Obamacare? Then the Australian said, did we mention the violence of U.S. toilets? Think about that for a second. It is a veritable swimming pool of water that greets you. When you open the toilet lid and when you flush, it all goes down the drain in a huge rotating whirlpool. Evidently, that's quite terrifying to Australians. And in the UK, it says America might give you fever. Americans are proud of their old world connections, no matter how tenuous. It says you might find yourself snorting dismissively at their fourth generation connection, but try to hold off until they're out of earshot. India says the U.S. doesn't offer much in terms of shopping. That's the only one they have for India. China says Americans love to follow their rules even when no one is looking. Gifts are no big deal, the Russians say. Gifts are not a big deal in America, the Russians say. And did you know that bribery was illegal? Socializing with Americans can be tricky, but sports help. Americans really are as cheerful as they seem. The women are a little uptight, and they don't appreciate chivalry. U.S. etiquette prevents flirting with a woman who is not your girlfriend or wife. Oh, these Russians. If you are not acquainted with a woman, whether she be in a restaurant, a street, or in a subway, do not look at her legs, etc. Americans could easily call the police on you, even for just ogling her. And then they talk about the business, that there's a mutuality of shaking hands. And the Japanese are absolutely surprised that we tend to laugh out loud, even the women, and show our teeth. Now, I kind of put this out there because I think that it's important for us to realize the depth of connection between our actions, how we live, the customs we create with one another, and what our core values are. And I was thinking particularly as I read these and was sort of laughing and stuff, but also realizing that in some ways there are great chasms around our core values, around things like gender and gender roles and empowerment and care and hygiene and, you know, various things like that. So it's really important for us to pay attention. And one of the things that I love about this faith of ours that we enter into, and whatever your understanding is or comfort level for doing, is that it asks us to go deep inside. Time and again, and ask yourself, what really matters to me? Ask yourselves, how are my actions really aligned with what I hold dearest deep inside? And what is my core value for others? Do I really care? Why do they matter to me as much as my own life? And that's some of what Christ taught, this very embodied faith, that we are bodies living together in this world. And you know, today's story is a great story. I'm going to make a confession to you. I dread preaching about this story every time it comes around because it leaves me cold, which is weird because I'm a total mystic and love the idea of things like this. But I think the reason that it leaves me cold sometimes is we can get lost in sort of these dimensions of Jesus being up on the mountain and his body, we're told, his actual body started shining like sunlight. Beautiful. How beautiful would that be? And he was talking with Moses and Elijah from the past, and many theologians think of that as a beautiful convergence of kind of heaven and earth coming together there, and this kind of quantum thing was happening through this body there, and that is beautiful, and that is wonderful. And the disciples are scared to death, and there's a great big glory cloud that comes. If you're Pentecostal, you know what I'm talking about. Well, not just Pentecostal, being silly. And that God's voice spoke from that cloud and said the same thing that we heard at the baptism story. This is my child whom I love, and I'm so well pleased. Listen, there's something important here, right? And what I love about this story, though, is what happens afterward. So we have this incredible mountaintop experience, right? And we seek those because they change us forever. That's why I hope you come to worship hungry, reaching out to God with all that you are, with your embodied experience. But just after this incredible thing happens, they come down off that mountain, and Jesus brings them down off that mountain. And, you know, rather than a lot of other stories that sometimes we hear, or maybe even I would be tempted myself to just stay up on that mountain. If I was glowing like sun, I might just want to stay up there, you know, and enjoy that and invite people to come up and, you know, and worship and touch God and so forth, which we know, you know, happens in many ways in this world. But Jesus did just the opposite. He got down off of that mountain. It's almost like he couldn't wait to get on. It makes me laugh because I sometimes wonder if, you know, God was acting a bit like a stage mother here. Do you know kind of the proverbial stage mother? You can smile about it. You don't have to buy this if you don't want to go with my analogy. I know you're very serious about this morning. Stage mothers sometimes, they're very proud of their children, right? You know, and they'll be sure to tell everybody how proud they are about their children and what their gifts are. And that's okay, you know, it's just pride. And I kind of felt like in some ways, not only did Jesus find himself glowing, but this great big cloud came and God spoke out of it again and said, "This is my beloved child. I'm so pleased with him. Listen to him." And it's almost like he's embarrassed when he sees his disciples and says, "Shh. Don't be afraid, you know, it's just stage mom doing what she does, you know. It's all okay, don't be afraid, I'm still me, you know, I'm still just Jesus, you know." And they start walking down the mountain together. Jesus tells them, "Don't tell anybody what my stage mom said, you know, it's not time yet." And they come down and the first person they meet is a mother who needs her child to be healed. And this child has had something like epilepsy, and it has evidently been a very... an extreme form of it, and Jesus holds this child, you know. Jesus touched everybody. He just touched and held bodies, and he touched and he held this child, and in his own way healed the child. And the disciples said, "Why can't we do that?" And Christ said, "Well, you know, you need to believe with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength again in the power of love to heal in this world, the power of God's love to heal in this world." And he said, "And if you love that strongly, with that kind of faith, when you see a mountain," what did Jesus say to that mountain? "Move." Yeah, or be thrown into the sea. There are different versions of it, depending on how, I think, zealous the person was that wrote it. But those mountains can move, and they can change. And then he went a little further down, and there became a dispute about him paying taxes and them paying taxes. How many of you think of that as a holy time when you look at your W-2s and fill it all? I bet you pray a lot, but, or invoke God a lot. I won't ask how you're invoking God in those moments, but there was just a simple moment like this right after it too. I mean, come on, you know, wouldn't you be tempted to say, "But my head is still up in the clouds. I just shone like the sunlight. What are you in the world are you asking me about paying your taxes right now for?" And Jesus came up with a creative solution, said, "Go fish, pull the fish out. There'll be a coin in there for you," and he kind of gets on with it, you know, and everything. But he didn't mind being right there, body with body with body. And one of the great traditions that we inherit in our denomination is that we have been deeply, deeply influenced by feminist and womanist theologians and thinkers and livers. People who live, not their livers. People who live. I love you so much. I'm very tired this Sunday. So my words are kind of doing this, all right? But people who live out those things. And one of the great things about this, I'm not sure we would understand that bodies have the right to love bodies in this world. That people have the love not only to love cerebrally, but that bodies need to touch bodies, need to hold bodies to be healed. Bodies need to stand by bodies in this world. There is something about being embodied with others in this world that is one of the most healing things we ever learn or experience in this world. We would never have known that, probably. Maybe we would have, but it helped get there a lot quicker if there had not been courageous women who said something very simple and stood with themselves on the line and said, "Bodies matter." They said, "Bodies matter." And they started caring for bodies. Our bodies. Your bodies. And learned that there was gold here. That there was a deep, deep truth here that gave life more meaning and more possibilities than we had imagined before. And we began to live out and proclaim that. And women began to live out and proclaim that in ways that was unthinkable before in much of human history. That now was the time for there to truly be an egalitarian vision of justice. That all bodies matter. And Christianity better wake up or be left behind as God's spirit of justice moves ahead. Are you with me? All right. I feel like one of those old westerns. Are you win me or again me today? Audre Lorde, who was a beautiful and powerful African-American feminist and writer and poet, wrote, "When I dare to be powerful, to use my strength in the service of my vision, it becomes less and less important whether I am afraid." And there is something deeply connected there to a core value. Do you hear that? I find my core value, I name it, which is that my body matters, my life matters, and I will hold yours passionately as equal. And together we will live in our strength with one another. We need not be subservient to one another. To be heard is to be healed is another powerful feminist maxim and core value. Beverly Harrison, who I love so much, a great ethicist, wrote, "We have yet to grasp the awesome, awful truth that we have the power to create or destroy one another through the giving or withholding of nurturance." I love Rebecca West's core value quote. She writes, "I myself have never been able to find out precisely what feminism is. I only know that people call me a feminist whenever I express sentiments that differentiate me from a doormat." And there is a deep connection here, I believe, with our story today and justice and this embodied person who was walking this earth saying bodies do matter and they are a sight, our bodies are a sight for divine encounter and divine love and divine change and divine courage. Not some disembodied sun god, which we know there were many of in the Roman Empire at the time. And as a matter of fact, Jesus would be experienced as kind of a sun god for Constantine 300 years later. And then we got into all kinds of trouble after that. But an embodied faith is a core value of our denomination. One of the things that we're doing this year is you have an opportunity during what's called an interim year to dive into this, to come down off the mountain. Let yourself come down off the mountain. It's okay to go up there. We'll go up there together, but let's come down together as well. And let's believe that the messiness of life as a community is worth digging into, is worth touching, is worth holding, is worth healing one another, is worth empowering, is worth feeding, is worth housing, is worth clothing, is worth conflict, is worth healthy conflict resolution, is worth my time. You got a little card as you came in that said "our time" on it. There's a reason for that. This is your time this year in this interim process. All I can do is plan the dates and plan the experiences for you to have together. But I encourage you today, I maybe even plead with you today, come out. Join us for this Lenten series on a Wednesday or on a Sunday. If a Wednesday doesn't work, we're trying to offer as many possibilities as we can. There's important work that you can do together, naming our core values, naming the justice that lives among us, looking at the ways that we act, not only together but out in the world, as we live a powerful, powerful vision of justice together. Can I ask you right now, will you consider that? Would you answer me out loud? Will you consider it? Okay. Would you consider it? Thank you. I need some encouragement today, okay? And there's a sign-up sheet in the back after the service, so please go back there and sign up for that, because I know it. We've felt it. We've seen that as we've talked about justice and the core values that give us strength, you have come alive as a community. Have you felt it this month? Which leads me to say there's something powerfully important here that's worth us doing together. And not only in this place, but a key part of what we're doing is we're looking out and saying, who's out there doing this beautiful work of justice? Who's out there doing the kind of work that restores communities to wholeness and people to wholeness and us to wholeness as a larger circle? And we've met a couple of our partners, and today we're so grateful that today we have Nicole and Angelina here with us today from the Crisis Center of Tampa. And we want to invite you, if you would be willing to come up and just share with us a little bit about your organization and some of your justice work there. And then after the service, I'll go ahead and put a plug in now if that's okay for you. Then after the service, they're going to be down in the chapel, and they would love to invite you to come to engage them even more around what the Crisis Center does and learn more about this very, very important resource in the city. Thank you. You can use that mic. That's perfect.
Good morning, MCC! Well, all right now, I just want to thank you, Reverend Presley, for inviting us. We're from the Crisis Center of Tampa Bay. My name is Angelina Rivera. I'm the Empowerment Coordinator for our Department of Training and Outreach. And we have Nicole here as well. She'll give a brief introduction of what she does. But we're here today to tell you about our services and that survivors of trauma have a voice, okay? Just like what he was saying about spiritual justice. Everyone has a body and needs to be respected, right? You have a voice. If something has happened to you, whatever trauma it is, we at the Crisis Center are here for you. Okay? So we will be at the chapel. Please come.